The stars are right, and that means it's time for another episode of The Whisper in Darkness. I'm your host, The Man from Lang. Thank you very much for joining me today. On this episode, we are continuing with our look at the player cards in the Edge of the Earth Investigator expansion. This time around, we are looking at the Seeker cards. This is part one of a three-part series. We will be reviewing the Seeker multi-class cards in a video of their own. There are spoilers throughout, if you care about that sort of thing. If you enjoy what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Just a quick reminder of how we break cards here on The Whisper in Darkness. The best of the best get an Elder Sign, while the worst of the worst get an Auto Fail, and the cards in between get a +1/+0, or Elder Thing, respectively. Cards that are good in one particular Investigator, or cards that you build around, get a Blessed Token. Before we get started, I'd like to thank the patrons of this channel for their tremendous support. The Arkham Horror LCG community is amazing, and these people have gone above and beyond to bring you content like these reviews. If you'd like to support the channel's goals and see your name on this list, head over to patreon.com, sign up for a tier of your choice, and claim your rewards. That would be awesome. I'd also like to extend a big thank you to Cole Monroe Chitty for the art that graces this channel, Nicole Fiscus for the new Whisper in Darkness logo, and Nate Lost in Time and Space for the intro, as well as the new overlays for these reviews. Thank you very much, everyone. I couldn't do it without you. We are back with our look at the player cards in the Edge of the Earth Investigator expansion. This time around, we are starting with the Seeker cards. And the first one is a doozy. This is Forced Learning. It is a permanent asset that doesn't cost anything. Talent and Ritual traits. It is a permanent, so it's limit one per deck. Purchase at deck creation. Increase your deck size by 15. During each upkeep phase, instead of drawing one card, draw two cards instead and discard one of them. I think we agreed to set aside an hour to discuss this card, and I'll let you kick things off, Matastrophic.
I will begin my hour now. Nathan, set a clock so I don't overdo my time. So I've been playing with this thing for quite a bit, and I absolutely love it. Just the fact that it increases your deck size is pretty great. You mathematically, you have the whole probabilities of like, oh, I want to draw this one particular card, and so you want the smallest deck possible and have it in order to have the most efficient deck. Well, you know what? The card pool is getting really big, and I want to play with cards. So having a 30 card deck just feels so small nowadays, because you want to pack in, you know, like all the stuff you want, and you want to try new stuff. And so a 30 card deck is not enough anymore. So the fact that you can increase your deck size without spending any XP, that's pretty great. You know what? I'll just yield my time now. That was a quick hour, wasn't it?
Yeah. I guess so. Yeah. I was expecting you to say a bit more about it. I don't like this card, and it's not due to its power level. Well, it's actually due to its power level, but probably not for the reason you think. My problem with this card is, like, what reason do you have not to take it? Like you were saying, I feel like the increasing of deck size is irrelevant. That's not really how the game operates. You know, this isn't Magic where you're trying to find specific cards at specific turns of the game. You know, because of the way this game works, you're generally like playing a couple assets on the first turn, and then what you do is really scenario dependent. So being able to draw through your deck faster to be able to find like specific cards can be really good. This also lets you play duplicates of cards so that you can find them faster and then pitch excess copies of them when you don't need them. Yeah, this card's really good.
There is a certain school of thought that I have noticed amongst a lot of like prolific posters and other members of the community, not either of you, by the way, but some other members of the community who think that the objective of this game is to devote your entire deck to finding this one incredibly powerful card that does everything. In that case, they would play a 10 card deck, and you know, they'd play a 10-card deck if they could, and everything would be great. That would be, like, their perfect deck. But I've noticed some other members of the community, ourselves included, tend to like playing robust and, you know, robust decks that can handle a variety of tasks and aren't all about taking this one square peg and, like, jamming it into, like, every hole no matter the shape. And it's nice to finally get some support for that playstyle. You know, of, you know, building generalist decks that have, like, skill cards, you know, and a variety of assets and events that might be situational. And I think what I absolutely love about Forced Learning is, like, I don't feel bad about playing situational events in my deck. Because what often happens, you know, with a large card pool is that situational cards just kind of don't make the cut because boring but efficient ones just are stronger. And when you have limited deck space, especially when you have enough of them that you can just pack the entire deck full of boring but efficient things. So being able to like draw two and choose one, that means I'm suddenly able to justify running situational cards that when I draw them, I may not need it at all. But because of forced learning, I can pitch it and draw something else that I do need. And I love that. This is what I like, honestly. Like, I just want to play forced learning in every deck. I wish it was neutral. I wish everyone could play this.
And even think about like in solo where you have to be a generalist, like you have to be able to combat willpower skill test. You have to be able to find, discover clues in some manner. You have to be able to deal with enemies in some manner. And oftentimes the solo problem is that you just don't have enough deck slots, but this solves that. And then it just draws you more cards. If you think about the math for a second, you're increasing your deck by 15 cards, but then you're doubling your draw power. So by like turn 5, turn 6, you've essentially got the same deck, if not a smaller deck. And with a larger card pool, like you were saying, Matt, like there's so many generically good cards that you can easily add, like, I don't know, 8 decent skills into your deck, and then all of a sudden you're at like 42 cards, and you're like, oh, well, that was easy. Now I just need to add like two more cards and I'm done. So I think you'd be surprised. There isn't much difference between a 33 card deck and a 45 card deck.
I actually published a deck list a while back called 45 is the New 30 that kind of does that. You actually take like a pretty decent Jenny deck, then you fill out with situational stuff and load up on skills, and now you're up to 45 and you're feeling good.
I think it's interesting to compare this card to something like Versatile, which came out during the Dream Eater cycle, which also lets you boost your deck size. I believe it's by 5 per copy of Versatile. So if you buy 2, you can end up with 10. And then you get to add 2 cards from any class. But the thing about that is you're boosting your deck size, but you're not increasing your draw power. So unless you're playing a seeker who has, you know, inherent draw power as part of the class, you may have those 2 cards in your deck that you really want, but it's going to be harder to draw them. Whereas this, you're increasing your deck size by 15, sorry, but you're doubling your draw power. So if you are looking for those one ofs in your deck, you know, I've been tracking how long my games have been lasting, and you know, generally it's about 12 turns. You know, the game is usually either wrapped up or pretty close to, so you know, 12 turns plus or minus a couple of turns, that's 12 extra cards you're going to be drawing over the course of the game, and that almost accounts for the 15 that you've added. And you combine that with the ability to filter the cards that you're drawing. Man, oh man, it's just like, so I'm getting to draw a bunch of cards and pitch the ones that I either don't want or don't need at in that particular instance. I agree with you, Matastrophic. 30 cards doesn't feel like enough anymore. Deck builders always talk about it. It's just like, well, what's card 61 or 62, assuming there's just one card that you would add to this deck. But nowadays, it's just like by the time you sort of put the essentials into your deck, when you're especially when you're playing solo, the number of flexible slots that you have to fill are very, very small, and you don't really get to play around with some of those more situational cards that, while they would be useful, they're not the Peter Sylvesters, or they're not the flashlights, or they're not the skill cards that you need. So having something like this that lets you gives you a little more room to experiment, I think is really, really good.
Yeah, I've noticed that over the years, watching Arkham DB and being a player of the game and following these sorts of things, I've noticed that the first thing people tend to cut is actually skill cards. And so they're kind of hurting their ability to basically turn failures into successes at no cost. You actually like can make your deck worse by doing that because a lot of people they want to play the fun situational cards. They're also often assets and events. So what gets cut? The skill cards that are not very sexy, because all they do, that a lot of them, they just let you pass tests. So like being able to have room, to actually play skill cards again might be like a nice breath of fresh air for a lot of people. And you and I, Nate, I know we already ran skill cards because, we are discerning, intelligent players, big brains. And I know know that Man from Lang, I know that you probably play skill cards because you're playing solo and you need zero cost ways to like get your tests over the line, you know. But like, I think the ability to like actually have room to play around in your sandbox and try things is, oh, it's so good. I love this card.
Yeah,
the only problem
get,
is it's new. It's seeker. It's not neutral.
Yeah, and there's another thing too. Is like there's that big hand deck that like wants to put like 15 plus cards in their hand, and when you have a 30 card deck, like you're going to be taking a decent amount of horror just by the sheer fact that your deck is like 7 cards big by the time that you end up drawing from it.
Yeah.
So that also helps to alleviate that. But my issue with it, this card, is just like it's so good. Like, it's so strong in any investigator that I have a problem with that kind of design.
Yeah, I like totally see where you're coming from. But I have a feeling what happened is that I think Jeremy is a gamer, and I think he listens to how gamers game. And I think a lot of the loud voices in the community were all like, 30 cards, small decks, good. Get my broken card as quickly as possible. Use it to beat the scenario into submission. And so I think this thing kind of got bumped up a little in power level in reaction to what people were saying.
That's your tinfoil hat theory for that one.
Tinfoil hat theory. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so like, yeah. As far as a rating goes, like, I'm inclined to give it a curse token because I just don't think it's healthy design, personally. When you're thinking about taking in the thick of it to take this card, you're thinking about, like, in the thick of it, versatile, then take this card. Like, that's kind of silly.
You
know,
have a 50-card deck. Awesome. So you know what the real problem with that, what actually kills that combo, is the fact that sleeves often come in packs of 50. So once you add your signatures...
Game over. Well...
Game over. You don't have no sleeves.
Most people buy, like, Dragon Shields with come in, like, packs of 80 or 100, so...
Yeah, I guess
so Nate is breaking out the curse token, which we talked about but hadn't implemented yet, simply because we wanted a token for those cards that are
like just
actively sort of bad for the game or
yeah.
Destined for the taboo list.
Yeah.
So
I can totally see why you would assign that rating. I know you have experience the game and tackle it and how it fits into like what you've learned and how you play. I totally see what you're saying there.
It's like it's kind of a shame because it's like it's so liberating at the same time that like it really gives a great shot in the arm for investigators that don't have that kind of draw power. But yeah, otherwise it's like it's just so good that it's just ubiquitous, I feel, and that's not especially a permanent asset. It's like there's I don't know. Permanents are problematic, I think, kind of for that reason.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to compare this with Geared Up, where the, you know, Geared Up gives you a benefit. That is, you get to play theoretically as many items as you can on your first turn at a reduced cost. Whereas this one, and couples that with a downside that you are otherwise skipping your first turn. Where the downside on this one, I guess, is that you have to discard a card that you may not have wanted anyway, which is actually sort of a good thing for a lot of players, where it's just like, okay, I drew my duplicate of whatever card, you know, whatever asset I happen to have in play, say Research Librarian. It's just like, I got my tome. I don't need my second Research Librarian. So long. Research Librarian. I got to draw two cards and I got to filter the cards for the one I wanted.
I think
so it's
that,
not really a downside. It's sort of like this is just all good.
I think that at some point the designers and maybe the playtesters in their very small decks good mentality thought that plus 15 deck size was the downside.
Yeah, it sort of seems like that to me. Like, oh, you're having to add 15 cards to your deck. That's awful.
Exactly. But... Now, the sign, and this is where I totally am on board with you, Nate. I think the sign of a truly broken card is when it's not hard to turn the downside into an upside. See Mr. Rook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the fact that, oh, the downside is if you see a weakness, you have to draw it. Yeah, but the upside is... you control when you get your weakness, you know, that's part of why Mr. Rook was incredibly broken. So I can totally see if you can turn the downside of Force Learning plus 15 deck size into an upside, then you get it. You actually, that's how you get an incredibly broken card.
Personally, or like, so how would you rate this one, Matastrophic?
Elder Sign, I love it. I love it. I just love it. I just love having 45 cards and not feeling bad about playing situational cards. Yeah.
The other downside is that you could like draw a card you want and a weakness, and then you'd have to draw the weakness. But like, come on, that's not gonna happen very often. Let's be realistic here. And then sure, discarding cards is bad, I guess, for certain scenarios. But imagine you're min, and all of a sudden you now have fuel for your scavenging, and then that's just incredible.
Winging it, boom. Combo.
Yeah, I'm torn. I'm sort of tempted to join Nate in curse token territory simply because I can see a lot of people just wanting to play this card in every deck, and who can blame them? Like, they're, you know, besides Seekers, you know, draw is hard to come by in a lot of classes, and if you gave me a card in the a mystic card that said basically draw two cards a turn, but you got to discard one of them, I'd play that in a heartbeat. So the fact that you can, that any, pretty much any investigator can take this, as long as you're willing to take Into the Thick of It and Versatile to purchase this, that's something. So I don't know if I'm ready to break out the curse token just yet, so I will give this this an Elder Sign. But yeah, it's very, very, very good, and probably a little too good. We'll see who wins, whether the generalists who like to play with a lot of cards outnumber the number of players who simply look at like a 30 card deck, or say even the rogue permanent in this box, which is you get to play a smaller deck. So we'll see whether the big deck or the smaller deck wins out out in the end. That brings us to an ally. This is Jeremiah Kirby, Arctic archaeologist. I'm not sure what he's doing in the Antarctic, but four cost asset with
gotta rat it.
An intellect skill icon, ally, Miskatonic, and Wayfarer trait. You get plus one intellect as a response. After Jeremiah Kirby enters play, choose even or odd. Reveal the top five cards of your deck. Draw each card with a cost that matches the chosen option. Shuffle the remaining cards into your deck. He has two health and one sanity, and he takes up an ally slot. One Easter egg in this card is that this is designer Jeremy Zorn pictured on the card. I believe he got his picture on this card because he was an amazing at the Call of Cthulhu LCG that predated this. He won several titles in that, and as a result there are several cards or several pieces of art featuring him. This is one of him. How do we, what do we think about Jeremy? How does he stack up against a very strong pool of Seeker allies?
I have one quick rules question to clear up for the audience. Does zero count as even or odd?
I believe it is even.
Do cards without a cost count?
Cards without a cost don't count. So skills are neither even nor odd, so you wouldn't get to draw skills.
Okay.
That's unfortunate. That lowers the discard stock for me.
On the other hand, it misses weaknesses.
True. It does, but
yeah,
that's kind of a shame that it doesn't hit skills.
Yeah, you know, that at all. Yeah.
At all, which is a bit of a shame, but I guess if you don't like putting skills in your deck, then this card gets a lot better. It has two health, which is nice for a Seeker ally. You know, Milan kind of doubles up on your already pretty high sanity most of the time, so having an extra bit of health soak is pretty nice. It's got plus one intellect, which is fine, and it draws you some cards, which is fine, but it feels a little redundant.
The way I look at this guy is, first, he draws cards, so I want to compare him to Laboratory Assistant, who when you put her into play you draw two cards. I'm just gonna, like, for my own internal mathematics, I just want to assume that his ability draws you just on average two. Just assume he's gonna draw two. So about as much as Lab Assistant, costs two more, but gives an intellect icon. I'm not sure how to feel about it. It doesn't feel overwhelmingly amazing because it, like, the fact that he's four cost compared to, like, laboratory assistant at 2 feels a bit much. That being said, he has the intellect boost. That also being said, Milan costs 4, and he gives you resources back over the course of the whole game. He feels fine.
Yeah, I'd agree. This guy seems just okay. Obviously the passive intellect skill boost is important. If he didn't have that, I don't think he'd see play. Yeah. Drawing the cards, I mean, there's going to be players who are going to be like, oh, he's going to draw me 5 cards. That's not going to happen most of the time. So you're probably going to have to settle for 1 or 2 or maybe 3 cards, depending on how you build your deck. Again, Milan generates your resources over the course of an entire scenario. Seekers have ways to draw cards already, so adding another way of drawing cards. It is, I think, important to note here that Jeremiah himself is even, so presumably you're going to be paying 2 copies of Jeremiah. So I think even is probably the way to go over odd. I did take a look at the Seeker card pool last night, just out of curiosity, and it does turn out that most of the most popular Seeker cards are even. Most of the Seeker cards that see the most play are even. So if you are building around this guy to a certain extent, even is probably the way to go, although there are some notable exceptions. One being Mind Over Matter, which is odd. The other, just in terms of sheer power, the Necronomicon is odd. So it's not an even split down the way, but generally speaking, most of the Seeker cards that see the most play are even. I don't know if you really build around this guy, do you?
No.
It doesn't seem...
Seeker already has easy options that you don't have to like sacrifice your deck building to build around. That being said, if you happen to have mostly evens, this is pretty good, because if you're reliably drawing 3 or 4 off of him, the fact that he can miss your weaknesses, it's actually nothing to sneeze at, because it sucks to like play like Cryptic Research or Preposterous Sketches and then hit a weakness and you cry. Yeah, it's nice that he misses weaknesses.
Yeah, this to me kind of feels like a no stone unturned on a stick.
Yeah.
You know?
There you go.
Like, if you kind of think about it that way, like, that card costs 2, this card costs 4, but then gives you soak and an intellect boost, like, yeah. Fine.
You do dig 5 down, so that's pretty good. Yeah, if you're looking for something specific.
So how would we rate Jeremiah?
I think I'd give him a 0. He's okay.
Yeah, I think the ups and downs, you know, like, how does he like, all the comparisons we're doing, I think a 0 seems appropriate.
Yeah, I'd agree. He sort of seemed like a 0 card to me, just because he's, you know, he's good. The passive intellect skill boost is good. Drawing cards is good. But man, the ally slot is just so competitive that I feel like a lot of the time I might end up overlooking this guy in favor of other allies that do specific things that I'm looking for. This guy's just sort of generally okay, as long as you hit that draw and get something out of it. If you end up drawing a pile of skills, I feel like that's a bad feeling if you play this guy for 4 and you end up, say, skill, weakness, and a bunch of odd cards when you've called even. That's not going to feel very good. You're just not getting the value out of him. So yeah, I think 0 is a good spot for him. I still don't know what an Arctic explorer is doing in the Antarctic, though. Maybe he got lost.
Literally unplayable.
Or maybe
he's on the literally other side of the world.
Maybe he's just a bad archaeologist. he doesn't know north from south.
Or maybe he tunneled all the way through. He dug so deep. Maybe he played Delve Too Deep like 8 times in a single scenario, and he came out the other end of the world.
The next card we're going to look at is an event. This is Written in the Stars, 1 cost event with a wild skill icon insight trait. Fast, play only during your turn. Discard the top card of your deck. If that card is a weakness, shuffle it back into your deck. Otherwise, for the remainder of your turn, while that card is in your discard pile, commit it to each eligible skill test you perform. I think it's fairly obvious that this synergizes the best with Norman Withers, who is really the only investigator in the game who always gets to look at the top card of their deck. other investigators can rig the top card of their deck, but that requires other cards and more time and a little more work. This is nice for Norman because Norman decks tend to be very skill adverse because skills turn off his ability. So Norman decks tend to feature fewer skills. But there are some skills that he would like to play, namely deduction, largely because Norman, because he is a limited to level zero seeker cards, he doesn't have access to a lot of the clue tech that other seekers have. So whereas Daisy can pick up archaic glyphs and just go to town and discover piles of clues, Norman can't do that. So if you want him to be a clover, he sort of needs deduction. There is a nice combo here with deduction. If deduction's on the top, you use this to dump it into your discard pile, investigate three times, discover six clues. That's pretty nice. What do you guys think about this one?
It was actually, like, obviously it's great in Norman, but I was also kind of thinking about this card in Amanda Sharp, kind of for the same reason. She ends up including a lot of cards that have multiple icons on them, you know, whether it's cards like Working a Hunch or Extensive Research or something like that. You know, you discard a card and she wants to be taking a ton of skill tests anyway, because that's kind of just how she works. You're putting cards underneath her. So it could be decent in those scenarios where you, like, maybe you just need an extra couple of icons because she starts at a two. And then you have deduction under her, that's three, and you can kind of do a similar thing, like you were mentioning, Man from Link, and get, like, six clues out of it. So I think apart from that, it's going to be pretty hard to find uses for it.
Yeah, I think if you look at this as, like, a card that, like, digs and, like, kind of, like, pseudo card draw, it's really bad for as pseudo card draw. The secret card pool is that is so robust now that you can do basically anything you want with your deck. You know, you can dig all the way through it and you can draw a zillion cards, like, without even spending very much. So if you're blind discarding, don't play this. Like, this is just, like, the secret card pool is just way too robust, and there's so many better options for doing this kind of effect of, like, digging to get a skill card. That being said, if you're Norman, this is pretty good, because Norman always knows what the top card of his deck is. I see how you can set up interesting Amanda Sharp combos, and if you're already looking at the top card of your deck, like, a lot, I see how this would complement that. But if you're going to blind discard, I wouldn't play this. It's just the Seeker has way better options, even at 0 XP, than this.
Yeah, I think it is worth mentioning that Norman's signature asset, the Livre de Bone, essentially does something similar to this.
True.
So true. You've already got one card in your deck that does this. Do you need more? I mean, the ability to play to commit a card to multiple tests is what sets this apart. But I could also sort of see this being card 31 and 32 in Norman, where it's like, yeah, it'd be nice to have, but my signature asset does something similar, and Norman's probably going to have the card draw to find his signature asset reliably. So yeah, I totally agree with you, Matastrophic, that just blind discarding is just not that's pointless. Yeah. So you're either going to be playing this in Norman, or you're going to be playing some sort of, I think maybe Gloria Goldberg could do something with Scroll of Secrets and stuff like that. But that's a lot of work for what may end up being a pretty minor effect. So what do we rate this one? Is it a blessed token just because of Norman, or does it creep lower?
I guess the question being is, like, does Norman play this past level zero? And if he does, then it's probably a blessing, but otherwise it's probably an auto fail. Yeah, I was being charitable with talking about Amanda Sharp, but yeah.
No. I see what you're going for, Nate, and I do like it. You know, like, I'd also, you know what, you hit the nail right on the head there, Nate. At zero XP, you, like, put it in there in Norman, you might cut it, you might not. But then after 0 XP, you overwrite it with a leveled Mystic card. But like every other investigator, don't even bother. It's an auto fail. So an auto fail, except sometimes it's a bless.
Now we're altering the tone. We're giving bless auto fails.
No, that's Oh man, we're just these cards are so hard to rate.
I think I'm gonna end up on a bless token for this one. I think Norman's the only one interested in this. I'm not sure if it's a good bless token or not. I feel like if it is a bless token, it may end up being an elder thing. In the end, something that, you know, we could play, but I feel like it would probably get cut once better things come along. So, but yeah, I think Norman's the only one who's really going to be interested in this, just for ease of use. And I guess it'll be up to the individual player whether they think this effect is worthwhile or not. And I think that's only something that will come once you have a chance to sit down and really play Norman, which I haven't had a chance to do. I played Norman quite a bit when he was first released with his old signature replacement cards, and that's a very different deck from the new Norman, who has much better signature cards. So I think once I get a chance to sit down and play the new Norman, I'll have a much better assessment of where this card stands. But as it is, I think it's probably a bless for Norman, and then we'll see where it ends up on the spectrum from there. The next card in the box is Hiking Boots. It is a 2-cost asset that costs 1 experience point, agility skill icon, item, clothing, and footwear. Limit 1 footwear per investigator. This is only the second pair of footwear in the game, the other, of course, being the absolutely stunning track shoes from the Circle Undone. The hiking boots give you +1 agility, and as a response, after the last clue is discovered from your location, exhaust hiking boots, move to a connecting location with at least 1 clue, or to a connecting unrevealed location. Passive agility is nice for seekers. They tend to lean into evasion more than fighting, so I'm not going to turn my nose up at that. What are your thoughts?
This card's so good.
Yeah.
In solo, the play pattern is generally investigate, move, do something else, or move, investigate, do something else, and this just saves you an extra action. If you're an investigator like Ursula, for instance, you're then investigating, move, investigating for free, which is pretty nuts. You can combine this with things like Pathfinder or Shortcut, get even more move actions. That could be pretty good. It's also 2 resources, whereas Track Shoes was 3. Why this is cheaper, I don't know, but it is. Because it's a Seeker card, I guess.
Yeah, because Seeker steals everyone's lunch eventually.
Apparently. Like, it's basically track shoes you don't have to make a test for. And track shoes, like you said, Man from Lang, is a stellar card.
Yeah, I mean, this, like, Ursula was already one of the fastest seekers in the game due to her free investigate after she moves to a location. And this just bumps her up to make her even faster because she clears a location, moves, investigates again. I would be really tempted to just see how quickly I could complete scenarios now with between this card and Ursula. I mean, the nice thing about this card is that you don't even have to be the one who clears the clues. Somebody else can do it and you can trigger the response. And if Ursula's teamed up with somebody and Ursula has already gone and made a pretty good dent in the number of clues on a location, somebody can follow it up with a cheeky investigate, clear the clue. Ursula moves again and gets a clue at another location. So it's
oh my God.
It's so good. I mean, the only problem with the hiking boots is more scenario specific. There are certain scenarios, like most of the Forgotten Age campaign, that are the antithesis to hiking boots because of the way locations are revealed during the game. The explore mechanic is not very movement friendly because the locations tend to come out in strings rather than in bunches. And there are certain other scenarios where potentially you could run into some trouble, but man, I think for the most part these are pretty good.
Yeah, even if you're not triggering that reaction a lot of the time, like, it's still 2 resources for an agility boost. Like,
slotless agility boost.
Quote unquote, because 1 footwear, I guess, is technically
there's no other footwear
now.
That Yeah, unless you're min, like you don't have any other choices.
Yeah. So it's essentially slotless, free agility. Like that's still pretty good. And then the fact that it just has this absurd ability attached to it just is the cherry on top.
Yeah, not just the cherry, but man, I could launch into a whole speech about like why Seeker is broken and like
this would be included in the conversation.
This would be included in that speech because you just stack extra actions on extra actions on extra actions on extra actions. And everything's super cheap, probably because this was balanced against Pathfinder, which just gives you a move all by itself. And so it had to cost less than Pathfinder, but it also had to do more than Pathfinder. So they gave it an agility boost. It's just like, this thing is absurd. And it's like, why didn't they just ban Pathfinder and then stop designing cards, assuming Pathfinder was in the card pool? You know, just like, yeah, this thing's absurd. Two cost, one agility, slotless, already very, very, very good. And then you have the ability that gives you extra actions and like multiple extra actions over the course of the game. That's like, that's crazy.
Yeah. What Seeker isn't investigating?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Or again, it doesn't it's even... one of these cards that rewards somebody for doing something they were already going to do in the game. It's not like you have to go out of your way to trigger this. It's like, well, I was going to investigate. So now I get a move on top of that. Sweet. How do we rate this one?
It's a pretty easy elder sign, right? Yeah.
I'd call it a curse because it adds to the problem of like why Seekers are completely overpowered.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah, I'd give it a curse token too by that regard. Yeah.
Curse tokens all around for more broken Seeker cards curse. That are just... Can you imagine what this game would be like if all the other classes received similar cards comparable to what the Seekers get?
It would be just so like, robust. Oh my god.
The game would be so busted that it's just like, well, I'm a mystic and I can do amazing mystic things with all of these amazing mystic cards. Instead, they're like, well, I hope I get a card that boosts my willpower by a little bit. That'd be nice.
That being said, in the Jeremy era, he's been trying to give other classes Seeker-like effects. Safeguard. Sign magic level 3. Jeremy's trying to give lots of action, like lots of extra action effects to, you know, like multiple classes. Like he's trying to get there. It's just that Seeker, it's already so good that you have to, like their extra action effects are like weighed against Pathfinder. So they have to like be super efficient and super XP efficient.
Yeah, like the issue is that you know, with track shoes, it made you make the agility test, right? Mm-hmm. And that was fine because it helped you make that agility test. But this is just free. Like, you just
move. You just do it. Yeah.
You just like, what?
Yeah. You just do it. Yeah.
I mean, maybe it would have been more balanced if they tacked a test on this. I'm not too sure which test it would be.
Agility 3.
Yeah, there you go.
But then a lot of, I think anybody... But Ursula would probably struggle with that. But then,
well, it's tailored for Monterey Jack, and he already has a 4 agility. I think it's 4.
It might be 5. Yeah, he has 5 agility and 4 intellect.
Yeah, it's tailored for Monterey Jack.
And Ursula's got 4, so yeah, maybe if they tacked a test on this one, it wouldn't have been those two investigators would have had to have had at least have cleared some sort of bar. Much like track shoes
but the problem is if they added a test, it would compare unfavorably to Pathfinder. Like Pathfinder is the real problem here, and they just keep designing cards assuming Pathfinder is in the card pool.
The next card in the box, I think the final one that we're going to look at in this section, is Join the Caravan. It is a 5 cost event that costs 1 experience point. It has intellect and agility skill icons, the insight and synergy traits. Fast, play only during your turn. Reduce the cost of this card by 1 for each different class among cards you control. Move to any revealed location. We talked a lot about elusive during our review of the revised core set. This is pretty much elusive, with the exception that you do not get to disengage from enemies first, but you may move to a location with enemies. What do we think about Join the Caravan?
I feel like unlike Gang Up, this card is not that great. Comparing it to Hiking Boots, for instance, like Seekers already have so many good movement tools that this card feels pretty mediocre by comparison. I find it hard in a lot of scenarios, and maybe this is more indicative of, you know, just previous scenario design, but they're pretty compact. And like, you generally really only need to move maybe two locations at most. And it's like a shortcut plus a move action is usually enough to get away or do whatever it is you need to do a lot of the time, that really anything beyond that is pretty unnecessary. So playing a card like this doesn't really feel that great, unless you're playing a scenario like, for instance, In Too Deep, and I don't know, for some reason you get like pushed all the way back or something, and then you're moving like 15 locations forward or something, then it's pretty good. But I think barring circumstances like that, this card feels pretty meh.
I think this card falls into the trap that quite a few Arkham cards do, where that I think its cost was balanced around having the full synergy suite. That's why it costs 5, even though it feels like it should cost 2. And on top of that, the effect seems like it's one of those effects that doesn't actually come up in game very much, because like you were saying, Nate, you often only need to move one or two places. But yet it's balanced assuming that you're going to move 15, that you're going to move like 15 locations, you know, you're like not like 90% of the time. I also, one thing I appreciate about this card is I think this is why they tabooed Elusive, because they wanted Seeker to steal its lunch and they couldn't do it. Like, I really think that, like, why would they taboo Elusive and then immediately print this?
Yeah.
Elusive gives you that disengage, which
I think it does give you the disengage, but
it's just, you know, arguably much better than this, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like Elusive a lot more because it's more versatile and it does more things, but I think I see why they tabooed it.
I think that in terms of cost, you know, if you're playing an off-class Seeker, chances are you're paying 3 for this. Seekers have resources, so, you know, I don't even know if you need to go that hard into the whole synergy thing in order to play this for a reasonable cost. I don't know. I mean, Seekers have so many good movement options that, I mean, they keep printing these cards in Seeker that allow investigators to move. There was the Esoteric Atlas we had a couple cycles ago. So they release a bunch of these cards that are sort of, that try to outdo they're not even trying to outdo Pathfinder and Shortcut, because they're already so good, but they're just trying to give you another way of moving, and ultimately they end up coming up short. Now, I'm not entirely sure this one's in the same category as those, simply because having peeked at some of the maps in the campaign, they are enormous. And so, as good as Pathfinder and Shortcut are, they may not be enough. And I think that's where this thing comes in. I'm reluctant to sort of poo-poo it at this point, because I feel as though if the maps, and especially if investigators start to get spread out, probably not in solo, because you're sort of just relentlessly moving forward in solo, and there's rarely revealed locations in front of you that you would have to worry about. So, and I doubt you'd have to go back, but if you're playing in multiplayer and the maps are forcing everybody to sort of scatter to all ends of the earth to do certain objectives or whatnot, having the ability to move the Seeker immediately to a Guardian to give them a hand with the enemies that are still engaged with them may have some value. But that's, you know, that's campaign specific, right? It's,
yeah.
I think Innsmouth has something similar, large maps where people can end up getting sort of separated. Devil Reef, you know, you might need to, theoretically, you could leave the Seeker behind on an island and the boat takes off and everybody goes to try to find the other objectives, leaving the Seeker behind. The Seeker plays this, catches up with them later. Like, I can see value in it, but
much like Elusive.
Yeah. So how would we rate this one?
The kind of argument to that whole argument is, like, while this provides you one big burst of movement, Hiking Boots and Pathfinder, by extension, offer you, I think, movement in a much more practical way, where it's like, as a Seeker, you're going to move once or twice, investigate 2 or 3 actions, and then keep going, where it's like, you're not going to, like, move in a single turn. Or if you do, it's going to be once. Like, you're going to need that effect once. And I think for that reason, I'm more leaning towards an Elder thing for this card, because you're definitely not going to play two of this card, I think. It's a little expensive for what it does, and then it forces you to play a whole nother strategy on top of it just to get that effect, so it's like,
This is one of those cards that we've talked about. I think we talked about quite a bit with Forced Learning, where it's like, when you have a 30-card deck, you don't have room for this, because your card pool, especially the secret card pool, is big enough and robust enough that, like, you can build very effective decks that can handle any scenario using boring but efficient cards. For example, Pathfinder, for example, Hiking Boots, for example, Shortcut. And you don't have room for this anymore, because you've already loaded up on very, very strong and very efficient movement cards. Like, do you really need a seventh one in Join the Caravan? One that's, like, very specific? You don't have room for that in a 30-card deck. So I think it gets an Elder thing.
The one deck I have no evidence or no experience to back this up, but this card sort of, when I first read it, I thought, maybe this goes in one of those Min Barricade decks where Min barricades herself at the beginning of a scenario. Everybody else leaves. She stays behind and does her Min stuff. And then when it's time to go, she plays this and catches up.
But that's situational. That's kind of exactly what I was talking about. Yeah.
I think I have to agree with you. I was tempted to give this a zero, just because I don't know what this campaign is going to have in it. I think in the campaigns we've seen so far, Pathfinder, Shortcut, and Hiking Boots are more than enough, and this doesn't make the cut, so it gets an Elder sign, or an Elder, there I did it again, Elder thing. I'm going to need to create a token that is both of those things so I can assign an Elder sign thing to cards. Zero seems a bit too generous for the price tag that you're paying for this. You have to take the enemies with you. Not convinced. Yeah, I'll settle on Elder thing. That's going to do it for part one of our look at the Seeker cards in Edge of the Earth Investigator expansion. We brought out the curse token, as I expected that we would, for the Seekers. I don't know what it is about the Seekers, but the designers really love them.
Yeah, the problem with Seekers is that when you, and it's similar to like the color blue in Magic, is when you design a whole section of your card pool to card draw and card advantage, that is always going to be good, regardless of what game it is. And Seekers also have the added benefit of being the best at arguably the best action in the game, which is investigating. So it's like, you're getting the worst of both worlds with the Seekers design. So, like, I'm certainly not envious of the designers and how they have to design these Seeker cards.
We're going to have to do a whole video on dissecting the Seeker and what went wrong. I got to be honest. That's why the curse token is coming out, like, twice so far. Yeah,
I feel like when you look at how the game was designed, I feel as though investigating should have been separated from intellect, and card draw should have been separated from the Seekers. So investigating and draw were things that all investigators could do, and then you started from that platform rather than saying, okay, one class is good at card draw, which I think enough card games have been released at this point that any designer should know that card draw is very, very powerful, regardless of game system. And then tying the skill, you know, one of the best skills in the game that you need to discover clues in this game, and you largely do that via intellect, tying that to one class is also problematic. And I think it puts you in a bind. And then you couple those two things, I think, with the movement issue as well, where Seekers are also good at another aspect of the game, moving around the map quickly. And I think that has been a recipe for disaster in terms of designing, and the fact that, then Seekers also received a smattering of cards that let them outfight most Guardians
Oh yeah, that's where the whole hour episode comes in. Yeah.
basically do everything better than anybody else. I mean, anybody who's ever had a chance to play the Necronomicon knows exactly what that card is capable of doing. Yeah, you just end up with trouble. So
So very appropriately, we ended up with two cards receiving some curses, one of which draws, and another one of which free moves, like two of the problematic aspects of the Seeker, and so they both got curses.
but then, like, on the other side, we got written in the stars and joined the caravan. So it's like,
Yeah. Well, those are cards that are incredibly situational. Maybe not incredibly, but very situational. And the card pool is big enough that, and the Seeker card pool is so robust because they keep getting hyper efficient cards like Hiking Boots that mean you only have a 30 card deck, and there's no reason to take things like Written in the Stars or Join the Caravan because the rest of your card pool is very efficient.
yeah, I think they run into that with their upgrades as well. They just have so many amazing upgrades that a card needs to do spectacular things to make the cut there. So that's going to do it for this episode. If you enjoyed what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. If you need to contact me, I can be reached at manfromlang@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter at manfromlang. Until the stars are right, keep your shotgun close and your Elder Sign closer. Take care out there, and happy investigating.